You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 9th, 2017. You're listening to episode 241. My name is Rob. Sitting here with me is Jason.
Hello.
Hello. This is our first episode we're recording back since the holiday.
Yes.
Holidays. We haven't really talked much since before Christmas. So how were things?
Good. Yeah. They normal Christmas stuff. Stayed home quite a bit.
Good.
With the kids and hung out and opened stuff and put together an S ton of Legos, as you saw on the shelf.
Lots of Legos. Some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that's what my son wanted for like every present.
Yeah.
And that's what my team got me at work. And so I put together a lot. I was burned out on Lego sets when I was done. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But they look cool, and he's very happy.
Yeah. I actually put together a Lego set over Christmas too.
Really?
Yeah. I realized unpacking some boxes, of course, that we still haven't unpacked since we moved,
right?
You know, 3 months ago, I found a Lego set that my wife gave me for Christmas the previous year.
Oh,
and
what was it?
It's a Minecraft set.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I put that together. That was fun. Building Legos, it's kind of soothing and calming and satisfying. It is satisfying. But once it's done, what do you do with it?
Well, for me, it's easy. I give it to my son and let him play with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the end of that.
That's the challenge for me with Legos as an adult.
Right.
You know?
Put it together and then you're like, and now I'm done.
And now what do I do with it?
Some of them are cool enough to, like, I have my Raze speeder.
Yeah.
That's the one I got for me, like, and put it up on the shelf because it's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Right.
It's just sitting on my
right.
desk in my office now at home, and it's kind of in the way.
Right.
So
it's understandable.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, that's the great conundrum of Legos when you're an adult.
Right. So hey, funny story.
Yeah,
Minecraft made me think of this. So you did the Secret Santa thing at work.
I did.
And you obviously know who you had now.
Yeah.
Which is who had you.
It was just funny.
Which was most funny for me, since you were both asking things about the other person.
Yeah. You were the go-between.
Yeah.
It was cracking me up. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, I didn't care. I just was funny because you asked the first day, like, oh, hey, I need some more ideas. And then she called me from the store and was like, hey, I'm buying this for Rob right now. Does he have this? And I was like, I don't think he does. And she's like, all right, thanks. And I just had to laugh to myself because it was like, hey. That is funny.
It's funny.
So
Secret Santa.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cool. Anyways. So, We're back
doing a podcast.
Did you
play any games over the holidays?
I did. I played several games. Some of which were even adult games.
Oh.
Not like that means weird when I say that. Some of these were not kids games.
Okay.
I got to play, but kids games wise, we played this new game we got for the kids called Feed the Kitty.
Feed the Kitty.
It is a game right game.
Mm-hmm.
It is very reminiscent of Left, Right, Center. You know that one, right?
That's familiar.
There's like, you have chips and you roll the dice and you do exactly what the dice tell you to do. And it's not a game, it's an activity.
Okay.
And this Feed the Kitty game is that too. You roll the dice and it either says, so you get dealt mice in the beginning, and there's a cat bowl in the middle with the extra mice in that. And when you roll the dice, you roll two of them, the options you will get are, the most common option is a sleeping cat, which means do nothing. You roll two dice. One is an arrow that says, give one of your mice to the player on the left.
Mm.
One is a food bowl that says, put your mouse in the food bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last and rare one that was only one side out of 12 is take a mouse from the bowl, right? And you play until one person has all the mice, and that's the whole game. Like,
great.
And it plays itself, right?
You play until one person has all of the mice?
Sorry, until only one person has mice. And what's happening most of the time during the game is you're reducing the quantity of mice in play.
Yeah.
Because every time you roll a food bowl, you put it in the bowl, so there's less and less to go around.
Yeah.
Yeah, for kids games, it's actually really fun. Like, I enjoy it with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they can figure it out. They roll the dice, they do what the dice say.
Sure.
Right? And then we also, somebody got us charades for kids. So that has like a picture of something a kid would understand, like a turkey or a ball or something. And then they have to try to get you to guess it. And Josiah is actually pretty good at it, like giving you hints that are not crazy. He's really, though, like, I have one hint to give you. If you don't get it from that hint, we're not going to get anywhere. So I'm just going to keep giving you that hint over and over again. Which is understandable.
That's
for
fun.
Adult games, I played, I said that again, it sounded weird. We played Love Letter with some friends on New Year's Eve, and then we played No Thanks, which I'd only played once before and didn't really care for it, but I thought I would give it another try, and I actually really enjoyed it. So No Thanks is kind of like a reverse trick-taking game. What happens is, I like to say things about trick-taking games so people get offended when I'm wrong. What happens is, at the beginning of the game, each person is dealt 11 tokens, right? And then there are 24 cards placed face up in the center of the deck, in the center of the board, out of like 36 cards or something. And you take it and you flip a card over, and it has a value on it between, I believe, 3 and 38, something like that. So, and what you do with that then is, so I flip it over, it's my turn. I either take that card, or I say no thanks, and I put a token next to that card. So the way the game scoring-wise works is, cards are all worth face value. So obviously low cards are great, high cards kind of stink. So, but the trick of the game is, if I have, say I have 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, that's only worth the lowest card. And I want low score, right? So so that's the power of the game, is trying to chain those things together. So, because you can actually, if you can actually be reducing your score that way, which is pretty awesome. It does feel a bit like, it's a bit random, right? But the chips kind of help you offset that a bit. Not always, though. If somebody's being stubborn, you very well could have a game where everyone just keeps putting chips out. But at the end of the game, all the chips you have are minus 1 point each. So,
oh, chips that you still have in your...
And so theoretically, the person with the highest score, like, will likely have the most chips as well, because they've taken the chips. Because if it goes around twice, there's eight chips out there, they take it, that's minus 8 points. So it's pretty decent.
Okay, that's cool.
What about yourself?
We played Joking Hazard.
Yeah,
that's the Cyanide and Happiness card game. We bought that for my father-in-law because he really, really, really likes Cards Against Humanity, like too much. like everybody, we've all played it with him too many times, and all of his kids, and...
But he still wants to play every
time. We're all tired of it, and we don't think it's funny anymore because it's not. And he still enjoys it. So we got him a different dirty card game, and he doesn't know what Cards Against Humanity is called. He just says, let's play that dirty card game. So we got him a new...
Wow, so he literally doesn't know what it's called?
No, he has no idea.
That is so foreign.
So let's play that dirty card game. So we bought him Joking Hazard in the hopes that he would latch onto a new dirty card game. And
did it work?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. So it's structured much the same as Cards Against Humanity and all of the offshoots from that. I would say it's in that genre for sure.
Right.
All of the cards, instead of having words on them, they all have a single panel from a comic, like a comic strip on them. And they're all from Cyanide and Happiness. If you guys don't know what Cyanide and Happiness is, just Google it. It's a webcomic, and it's about kind of being vulgar and gross out, and it's funny. You know, it's funny. So anyway, so you have the draw deck out in front of you, and whoever's the leader for that round, you turn over the top card of the draw deck to start the comic, and then you pick another card from your hand to make the second panel of the comic. And you either put it in front of or behind the first card
so
that you put out.
So everyone is sharing the panel?
So when the round starts, basically the leader for that round starts the comic with two panels. And then all the other players have to pick a card from their hand to be the third panel of the comic.
I see, okay.
Right? And then whoever's the leader for that round picks their favorite. So you can play it just like Cards Against Humanity, where the grossest thing wins, or the most offensive thing wins,
right?
You know, but it's best when everybody is playing to kind of create a little short narrative.
Right, right. That makes sense.
That's when the game is fun and kind of stands out and is special. So it depends very, very much on who you're playing with. And I would say when we played it, about half of us were playing it because we enjoyed the mini narrative aspect of it.
Right.
And the other half of us were just putting down, you know, the poop jokes and
right.
the boners and things.
Right.
So it's another one that's going to vary a lot depending on who you play it with. I think, though, in Cards Against Humanity is better when you play it with people who are intelligent and people who are well-read, who are
right.
people who are literate and people who are, you know, socially aware and
right.
politically informed and all that kind of stuff, right? So people who get some of the more cerebral stuff and can make the smarter connections between things.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, people just play it. And the game kind of frankly encourages you to play it to just be gross and offensive.
To the lowest common denominator.
Right. And Joking Hazard, it's easier entry for people. It doesn't push you towards lowest common denominator. But there's still plenty of opportunity in there for it. So,
right.
I mean, it was fun. I will look forward to playing that more with my father-in-law. I'm not going to pick up copy for myself. But
at least it's not Cards Against Humanity.
At least it's not that dirty card game.
It's
that other dirty card game now.
Let's play that dirty picture
card
game.
Let's play that new dirty card game you got me. That's the new one. So that was fine. I've also been playing... This is not a tabletop game, Jason. I'm sorry. I've been playing way too much Stardew Valley.
I don't know what that is.
It was originally... I'm playing on PC. It just actually came to, I think, consoles. At least PlayStation 4. It's like... Harvest Moon. It's a farming game.
Okay.
But you're already yawning.
Yeah, it's boring.
It's a farming game, but it's also like a little kind of hack and slash dungeon crawler thing, and it's also like, you know, build a town and get to know the people, and it's just super, super simple mechanically and very accessible, and there's something so, so wonderful about just... building a farm and letting your crops grow and then harvesting your crops and selling them for money and then spending that money to upgrade your farm. And it's just great. I think I'm about 10 hours into that game and I've got probably a lot more to go.
Oh, so there is a narrative that will take...
There's a narrative that's unfolding. And the game, you know, the game takes place... I don't really know if there's an end... to it. I don't know. I'm 10 hours in and I'm probably about 30 days into the game gameplay wise. Maybe not even that. Yeah, I'm probably about 30.
How fast do the crops grow?
It depends on what you plant. You know, like parsnips will grow in 4 days, but cauliflower takes, I think, 12 days to grow.
Okay.
Depending on what you plant and what time of year plant, because there's seasons, spring, summer, fall.
But if you're only 30 days into the game.
Yeah, I'm still in the spring.
Okay.
I think I'm approaching the end of spring, but
do you have to like save up for winter or something like that?
Yeah, I mean that's going to be. I assume that's going to be part of it. And you plant different crops depending on what time of year it is. It's very satisfying.
Cool.
Very satisfying. And you know, playing one day of the game, you might burn through a day in 10 minutes, or you might be able to kind of poke around and do stuff, and you know, in 30, 35. Maybe 40 minutes to spend a day. Depends on what you're doing during the day.
Okay, and you said hack and slash. So are there monsters or something?
So like if it's raining out, that means you don't have to spend time watering your crops and tending to your farm. And so it's a good day to go in the caves and go into the mine and mine for ore. And there are monsters in the mine also.
Okay.
And you can collect stuff from the ore and you can kill monsters and they drop loot sometimes. It's just very satisfying.
Interesting.
I like it a lot. I like it a little bit too much.
I believe that.
Yeah. So that's been occupying me this holiday season.
All right.
There you go. Yeah, I think that's all that I have to share.
Yeah, maybe we should talk about a topic.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Let's do that.
It's not too early, I don't think, for us to talk about Unpub.
Yep,
because Unpub is in March.
March 18th it starts. No, March 17th it starts.
Okay, yeah. So we've got basically, let's call it 2 months.
Okay,
2 months to be ready for Unpub.
Yeah.
So
it's not very long.
It's not very long. Now is the time to make sure that we are ready, and to make a plan. And designers out there, if you're planning to go to Unpub and you don't have a plan yet, you need to make a plan.
Especially now that you're hearing this a week after we recorded it.
Yeah.
Make a plan.
Make a plan. Otherwise, you're going to be caught off guard.
Exactly.
So let's start with you, Jason. What's your plan?
Well, I don't have a game yet.
Which okay, good plan.
Pretty much my MO for these things. Yeah. I always end up in a spot where I don't have a game that I want to bring.
You should get on that.
So I've got a couple prototypes, one of which I could bring, one of which is Perception. I can totally bring that, use it to tweak and balance the scoring. I might do that. Mm-hmm. We have full-time tables this year that we pre-bought.
Yeah.
So I very well may bring two card games to bounce between the two so I don't lose my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So Perception could easily be one of those. And that's the game with the keys that was originally the Zenner card game where you're trying to trick people with your score and stuff to win. And then the other one that hopefully the prototype will turn out as well as it feels good right now right now I'm calling it, I'm not really sold on the name, but is The Unearthly Suspects, like The Usual Suspects. And the idea is this came out of the advent calendar game that I had, and I'm not going to talk too much about it because I'll pitch it on my next time when I pitch in 2 weeks. Basically, the idea of the game is you are a bounty hunter, an intergalactic bounty hunter, and you are trying to catch certain people. You've got a bounty list of a card that has five guys on it, some of which are generic, some of which are just this species of alien, and some are specific to a unique. So there's eight species of aliens, and each one has a unique criminal that's like the big guy that you're trying to catch, right?
Yep.
What's unique about it is, just like the advent calendar game, there are two suspects on each card. So the cards form like lineups, kind of like, think of Guardians of the Galaxy, the lineup they're in, that sort of thing. The idea is that, every turn you're forced to trade. Every turn, everyone must trade a card with someone else. So the way you do that right now is you pick a card, you set it out in front of you, and that's what you're offering for trade.
Yeah.
And it goes first player around, everybody puts a card out, first player gets to choose someone else's card, and after that, everyone else can choose any card they want that's still sitting out there until the cards are gone. And the only other thing that I want to try out is, so many times secret goals, right, you don't reveal to the end. For instance, Saloon Tycoon's a good example of that, right? But I thought, what if there were two scoring mechanisms for that? What if you could save it to the end and it's worth, say, 20 points, or you could reveal it early and it's worth 15, but then you immediately get to draw another secret goal, right? So you're kind of basing on how early in the game have I achieved that. Plus, if you achieve it, you can then screw with everything again in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a game pitch from Jason.
So basically, that's pitch. I'll go into more details about how the scoring and everything works
in a couple of weeks
later.
I think, yeah.
But so that's what I'm thinking of right now, because that seems like an Unpub game, right? That seems like a game your average Unpub playtester would enjoy.
Sure.
One of the things I'll say that I'm struggling with right now is I really would like to get a little bit of cutesy art for it, because having goofy-looking aliens would be very engaging.
It really grabs people, these things.
So that's one of the things I'm struggling with. So, yeah. Builders, if you have any thoughts on that, I'd love to hear it. Some people are very for that. Some people are very against. I don't want to sink a bunch of money into it.
Yeah.
But having kind of funny-looking aliens would be cool. So,
yeah.
So I'm trying to decide what to do with that.
Sure.
I've got a couple ideas, but I'd rather not just use Google Art. You know what I mean? Because I want it to look consistent across the board.
Yeah.
And then for that prototype, I would just, the specialized guys would literally just be the exact same artwork, but with their name would be on it, like in bold letters to get your attention. Mm-hmm. So
fair enough.
Yeah. That's my plan right now. What about you?
Okay. I have decided I'm going to bring two games with me.
Nice.
Okay.
Soda Kings and...
Sorry. No, I...
An Idiot Spy. Sorry.
You're just... You're hurting here. Ouch. So Black Friday that I pitched several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a builder reached out to me, Matthew Ramsey reached out to me, and because on that episode I had said, boy, you know, I like those mechanically, but I'm not feeling the theme. So Matthew Ramsey reached out to me and he said, hey, I think I've got a theme for you. And if you like this, then I want to do some art for you, which is the kind of offer that you don't say no to,
right?
You know, and Matthew is a very talented artist. We'll get his link to his ArtStation page into the show notes of this episode.
Cool. I've actually forgotten about this.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So he had a really wonderful idea. He said he's always wanted to do a game or some kind of piece about octopuses,
right.
Octopi snuggling with stuffed animals, which is just
really weird,
and wonderful. And he said, "And I've even got a name for you. The name is Eight Arms to Hold You."
Nice.
And I was like, "Oh man, oh man." So Matthew and I are working on that. I've made some updates to the way that game plays, and I've play tested it a few times now. I'm real happy with it. Matthew's also been doing some follow up testing as well. He most recently did a test with 6 players. Not sure it's going to work. I mean, it worked, but it wasn't
not optimal.
Not optimal, right? So, right now, I think it's one of those things where it could be 2 to 6 on the box, best with 3 to 5.
Right.
You know. At any rate, that's still to be worked out. That's the kind of thing that we can polish from Umpub. But he's going to work on, he's going to do some art basically for it.
Nice. You know, so cool.
It's super cool. Worst case scenario, it'll go up on GameCrafter once everything's all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping, so the plan definitely is to have that at Umpub for people to scope that out and hopefully it'll catch a publisher's eye. And we'll see, right?
It's some publishers really like finished artwork in a game.
They sure do. And it's a really easy, accessible trick-taking game with some press your luck in it. It kind of swings back and forth between those two, which is kind of quirky and fun. I'm enjoying that a lot. So I'm feeling really good about that. I was feeling really good about it to start with, and then Matthew made that extremely generous offer. And
I know, that's so crazy.
Really couldn't say no. He's an incredible artist. So yeah, like I said, we'll get his ArtStation link into the show notes. I'll make sure that as soon as we have some final art to share, we'll get that on the website as well.
Sweet.
Then the other one is I made a prototype for Autumn. So that's ready to go.
Nice.
I just need to get it tested, get it in front of some people. So we need to get together.
We do, because I need to test my games. Yeah. You need to test yours. So
yeah. Right.
You still haven't played my mustache game.
That's right.
Which we need to do.
Right. So we need to do that. I need to get Autumn in front of some people. I want to call it As Fall Leaves. I want to call it that. I think that's a name now. As Fall Leaves.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it's Autumn : As Fall Leaves.
I think As Fall Leaves is stronger.
Okay. It's a little harder to say.
Yeah, but it's like, when I read that, I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
When I read Autumn, I'm just like, it's Autumn. Okay, I get it. But like, As Fall Leaves, I got to think about
it. It's more, it's more,
it makes me think.
Engaging, more involving of your brain. Yeah. Okay, so As Fall Leaves, I need to get that put together, and I need to test that. And for me to throw together some good enough for Unpub art, I think will be pretty easy.
Leaves, I feel like you could probably handle it.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily good enough for publishing art, but good enough for Unpub art. I can make that happen.
Well, that's all I'm looking to do with my stuff too.
Yeah.
It's like perception is literally just keys.
Yeah.
So like, I wasn't going to hire someone to make keys for me because I was like, oh, I'll just steal some Google keys. That's a little different.
Sure. So that's plan for games, but there's more to plan for Unpub than just what games are you going to bring.
Right. Like booking flights and booking hotel.
Booking flights
that we haven't done yet.
We need to do that. We need to do that this week, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we meant to do that. Like, we talked about it like 2 weeks ago and then totally forgot.
It was like 3 weeks ago.
We're terrible. We did this last year and we ended up driving instead of flying.
Because the flights were really expensive. So
we might have.
It's 2 months out. We should still be good with flights.
I hope so.
But we have to hope there's not a cheerleading convention again.
No, I think Daryl was careful to avoid that this time.
But it is St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Oh, geez, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oy vey.
So I'm hoping that we can get a room and everything on Friday.
I hope so.
If not, I know some other people going, so we could probably bum a room for a night if we had to. So you know who you are if you're listening to this.
You got friendly with the lady at the hotel last year, though.
She hooked you up. She was really nice.
She hooked you up. So I think you can...
How did she hook us up?
Because there were no rooms.
She got us in. There were no rooms. She's like, I'll get you in. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that lady was very nice.
She was super, super awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. But there's also making your prototype, right? And not just getting your prototype ready, but how far are you going to go on your prototype?
Right.
Like this year, so 2 years ago when I had Tea Party and I had Saloon Tycoon, okay?
Uh-huh.
Tea Party was a GameCrafter print, 100% GameCrafter.
Right. It looked good.
It looked good. And I'm real,
Well, you did that sweet artwork for it.
Yeah, and I put a lot of effort into that. Saloon Tycoon was not GameCrafter. It had a GameCrafter game board. But all the other components were homemade, were,
right,
you know, cut out cardboard and foam core and sleeved stuff. But I took a lot of, spent a lot of time to make the home printed stuff at least look decent and have,
yep,
you know, card backs and so, right, on and so forth. I didn't put as much time into Scrappers last year. Scrappers was about 50-50.
And it came together really fast.
And it came together really fast. Yeah, about 50-50 Game Crafter stuff, and the other 50% was homemade stuff. And the homemade stuff was not nearly as polished,
mm-hmm,
as the Game Crafter pieces. And it ended up looking a little mismatched, which I think most of the players at Unpub were able to get past that.
Right.
But I think for me, I felt less confident about it. I, mm-hmm, felt less assured of its preparedness, which was the right way to feel, because it was not prepared. It was not, right, ready for what I wanted it to be.
Right.
So I want to have full Game Crafter protos this time. Right.
I won't do that. I can say that I will, but it's so hard for me to put stuff on Game Crafter.
Mm-hmm.
It takes so much time for me to do that it's not worthwhile.
Yeah.
I mean, figure out how long it takes you. It'll take me five times as long to do it, mm-hmm, and then I'll probably still do it wrong. So,
well, so for me then, for that plan, that means I need to have that stuff uploaded and ready to go to Game Crafter. My goal would be by like February 18th to give me plenty of time for that stuff to get printed and delivered and me to see it and make sure that it's good,
right,
you know? I mean, that's being too generous, but I'd like to, that's probably being tighter than necessary, but I want to set myself a tight goal so that I can have that stuff done. And if I need more time, I can have more time, you know?
Right.
That's the deadline that I'm setting for myself. I need to actually look at a calendar. What day is February 18th?
It's a Thursday.
It is a Saturday.
Yeah, I just said that because if I had turned out to be right, you'd have been like, dude, how did you know that?
Yeah, I would have.
I just made it up.
Yeah.
Clearly, since it's a Saturday.
Yeah, and that's basically a month before Unpub. So if that
you locked your design a month before Unpub? Sorry. Old joke.
That's a goal for me. It's probably not a realistic goal, but,
right,
and it's going to depend a lot, at least for As Fall Leaves. That will hinge a lot or depend a lot based on playtesting and how well that goes.
And I don't, because it takes me so long to do that, and I don't like to rope myself into having it done so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather just, you know, do it at the last minute.
Right.
I will just, what I'll do is I'll print nice color cardstock copies,
yeah,
which they always look really nice. And I just put them in nice card sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
I like that for a couple reasons. One, I can play with the numbers and stuff as I go if I,
mm-hmm,
need to.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I just like that better.
Okay.
So,
but that means we both need to get a lot of playtesting in this month.
Yes.
And into February.
So we can do some lunches maybe.
Yeah.
Walk through some stuff.
For sure.
So.
Do some lunches, get some evenings or some weekends.
Right. I'm actually not sure if either of my games will support two players.
Oh, really?
So we can always draft an extra playtester for lunches.
Yeah. Mine, I mean, we could, I think Fall, as Fall Leaves could work with two. It wouldn't be as good though. Eight Arms.
Probably better.
It's not, it's just not great.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with mine, the trading mechanics wouldn't work very well.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So I almost would have to have not dummy players, but dummy boards going, mm-hmm, up that, mm-hmm, you could trade with.
Sure.
But that also might be really weird. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So, you should pitch a game, though,
because
we are
right
ways into the show here.
Oh, my gosh. All right. We've been chatting too much. Holy cow. So I'm pitching a game here. This game is called The Blanks Out of the Bag.
Okay.
Yeah, like the cat's out of the bag, but it's The Blanks Out of the Bag.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah, okay. This is a kind of a silly, really lightweight kind of little card game. I think it's probably 2 to 5. Yeah, let's say 2 to 4. I don't know. Anyway, so in this game, players are It's a little bit abstract. Let's put it this way.
Okay.
All right. So we have a little bag in on the table, and I have this structured as it's going. There's going to be a board. The board's just there for organizational purposes. You really technically wouldn't need the board.
Okay.
You could easily do it with a play mat instead. But I'm going to talk as if you have a board.
Did you listen to our episode about whether or not you need boards?
No. What did we talk about that?
We did.
So there is, starting with, there's a bag in the middle of the table, and there are 9 tokens that go in the bag, and each of those 9 tokens has a different animal on it. You know, a cat, a dog, and a bunny, and a turtle, and whatever, right?
Okay.
Okay, so 9 different animals. There's a deck of cards. What do I have here? There are a number of cards in that deck. 68 cards, okay? We have, of the 9 different animals, we have 7 of each in that deck, and then we have 5 cards that say draw on them.
Okay.
All right. So first thing you do is you shuffle up the deck of cards without the draw cards included, and you deal each player 3 cards.
Okay.
All right. Then you put 3 more cards face up on the board, all right, in a space indicated. All right. And then you put the rest of the, and then you take the 5 draw cards, shuffle them in, reshuffle the deck, shuffle the 5 draw cards in there, put that face down into, as a draw pile. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You then, you take the bag, you put the tokens in the bag, you mix them all up, and you take 1 token out of the bag and you put that
and hide it somewhere.
Nope. That's public information.
Oh, public information.
Everybody sees that. Everybody can see
right
the animal. You can see what's out of the bag. Cat's out of the bag.
Well, the blank's out of the bag.
Turtle's out of the bag. Parakeet's out of the bag. Okay. So you know that that animal's not in the bag.
Right.
All right. Then every player in front of them has a space for 9 cards in a row. On your turn, and then you pick a player to go first, whatever, that's fine. Every player gets 2 actions per turn. Your actions are, and so you start with 3 cards in your hand, no more than 5 cards in your hand at any time. Okay. So you have 4 actions. You can take 2 per turn. You can take the same action 2 times if you want, whatever. You can draw the top card from the deck to your hand. I said that there's those 3 face-up cards that were next to the deck. You can swap one of those face-up cards with one from your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You can play a new card to your track in front of you, face up, and you have to play them in order, number order from left to right, 1 to 9.
Okay.
Or you can take a card that you've already got face up in your track and swap it with one from your hand. Okay. At some point, somebody's going to draw a card from the deck and you're going to get a draw card.
Right.
All right. So when a draw card comes up, that player finishes their turn. If you drew that card, you put the draw card face down, and there's going to actually be a spot on the board to say where the draw cards go, because you're going to keep track of that. And then, you draw again. That's fine. If you draw a second draw card, that also goes there. So be it, right?
Okay.
Okay. So that player finishes their turn. And then the player who did that picks up the bag and pulls another token out of the bag and puts it face up on the board.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say the first thing we pulled out of there before the game started was a cat.
Sure.
What that means is there's no more cats in the bag, so that any cat cards are never going to score.
Okay.
Okay. But so now the next token that pulls out, let's say the next token you pulled out was a turtle.
Yeah.
Now any turtles that are face up in your track are going to score. And then each player, for every turtle you have on your track, you get 2 points.
And then the turtles will never score again.
Turtles will never score again. Any turtles that you have face up right now then get flipped over to be face down in your track.
Okay.
Okay. So, more turtles may come up later. That's okay. But any turtles that you have now, you're never going to get extra points for turtles now.
Okay.
For the rest of the game. All right. Now, you drew 1 draw card. You drew that turtle out. That draw card goes into the draw position number 1 on the board. And that means position 1 is locked. So whatever cards you have in position 1 are stuck there. You can't swap them anymore with anything from your hand. Okay? And if there's a dog there, you could still score that dog later, but you can't do anything about it. If that position was a turtle, you flip that card over, and that card stays face down for the rest of the game. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, now you're going to keep on playing until you've drawn all 5 draw cards out of the bag. And so the first 5 positions in your track, first 5 out of 9, are locked. Okay? And each time, you're going to score 2 points for every card that matched the token that just got drawn.
Okay.
All right. Now, the 5th draw card comes out. Score that, as usual. There are 3 tokens left in the bag.
Right.
Right. Okay. You know what those are now.
I would hope
so. Everybody knows what those are now. So this triggers the final round. Everybody else gets one more turn. So two more actions. Okay. Then in the last turn, you basically, you want to do your best to fill out your track. Okay. And you want to fill out your track, if you can, with the cards for the animals that you know are still in the bag.
Right.
All
right.
Now, final round of scoring. Everybody takes that final turn. Everybody now gets 3 points for each of the animals, each of the cards that they have face up to match the animals, three animals that are still left in the bag. Those score, flip them over. If there are any more cards left face up in your track, you get 1 point for each of those.
Okay.
And that's the game.
That makes sense.
Whoever has the high score is the winner.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I really need to see it.
Yeah, it's a little tough to wrap my brain around. I had to...
The track thing throws me off a little bit.
Yeah, because everybody's got their own 9 track, their own track of 9 spaces. There are 9 tokens in the bag. Even chance of getting any animal at any time because they're shuffled into the deck.
And how many cards can be on the track? Just nine.
You can only have one in each position.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But then you were saying the positions were locked.
So the first 5 could be locked depending on when the draws come out, right? So the draw card comes out as soon as the first draw card comes out, you score that animal for whatever new token is drawn, and then the cards in position 1 on everybody's track are there. You can't swap them. Because one of your actions is to swap something on your track with something from your hand.
And you can have as many animals as you want?
You can have up to 9 cards in front of you.
And you could do all one animal if you wanted to.
If you wanted to.
And that came up, you'd score a megaton of points, but then you'd just be screwed for the rest of the game?
Well, so as long as that position's not locked, you could pick that card back up and put it back in your hand.
Gotcha.
And replace it with something.
Now I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Way more sense. Yeah. All right.
And so the idea is that the further along in the game you get, you know better what's going to come up, right. What's going to come out of that bag.
So it's less scatter and splatter. You're trying to really...
But you're also narrowing your options on what you can place on the board.
Right.
And if you get to a point where a position is locked and you just don't have a card there, period... You just don't have a card there, and that space is dead to you.
Okay.
So,
and if you have a card that slipped over, it's also dead to you.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right. But if the space is locked, yeah.
So when you said you score any face-up cards left, say I put a cat down and the cat was first, so no points for cats, but can I put cats face-up down?
You can put... So if the cat is the first token drawn out before everybody starts.
Yes.
You can put cat cards down there as much as you want, but they're not going to score until the end of the game.
They would score.
Any animal would score at the end. Right. So that means if you score turtles on round 2 and then you get 3 more turtles later in the game, they're not useless necessarily.
And they scored 1 point each, or is there a point value on the card?
No. Each card is worth points based on when you score it. If you score it when the token comes out of the bag, it's worth 2. If you score it
at the end, it's worth 1.
If you score it at the end because the token is still in the bag, it's worth 3.
Okay.
But if you score it just because it's left over at the end, then it's only worth 1.
Okay. I think that actually makes sense to me now. You should prototype that. That sounds like fun.
I have no idea how well it would actually work.
Oh, me either. That's why I said you should prototype.
Yeah, like I am curious just to see if it would work at all.
The blanks out of the bag, though, that's a good name. I like that.
Yeah, that sounded catchy to me. Yeah. The blanks out of the bag.
Makes me think of Scrabble, the blank tiles. It's the first thing I thought when you said
that.
Or that you were swearing. Lowest common denominator.
Yeah, right. So there you go. Blanks out of the bag.
Not bad.
Nah, I don't know. It's a thing. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
I think it sounds kind of accessible. It's super abstract. I mean, there's no theme connection there at all.
There could be.
I don't know what that would be.
Magician pulling things out of a hat.
Oh, okay.
And boom.
Yeah. All right. That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. But then it couldn't be a bag.
It could be a magician pulling stuff out of a bag.
Yeah, but it's the hat. The hat is the thing.
That really is the thing.
Yeah.
You'd lose the name, but that would be, you could have fun artwork with that. And then people could be betting on what he was going to pull out next.
Well, and then I also thought there could be a camel up style betting thing for final scoring.
Oh, where you're betting what's going to stay in there.
Going to stay in there.
That's true.
So,
hey man, I just stole from camel up recently. You can't. It's too early.
Sorry, you're right.
So there is a camel up expansion called the Referee Camel.
Really?
And the Referee Camel makes it so that you can't carry camels on the camel's back.
What?
It like ruins the whole game.
Yeah, do you just hate playing that game? Is that why you want that expansion?
That's what I thought. I'm sure there's more to it than that, but that's what I read and was like, that's stupid.
You just want that game to not be fun.
Yeah, I guess. You want the thing that makes that game magical,
I mean,
take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that game is good but not great.
Right. Like, I feel like the game is great and then moves to good after about five plays.
Sure. The first time, first two times you play that game, it's great.
It's magic.
After that time, it's just like, yeah, that's cute.
Right. I'm with you.
Anyway.
We have some comments here.
Yeah, we do. Why don't you start?
Sure. I have a couple comments here from Robin Gibson, one of the only people that still posts on our website with comments, which I enjoy. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
He said, I think the pitch for your Black Friday game actually works really well for Rocket Wreckers. I know you've already made another decision, but it's not bad, with some adjustments.
Okay.
Rather than rival wreckers going in opposite directions, make it a race. The trick-taking could represent building up speed, while Jokers represent throwing things or ripping opponents' parts off the rockets. It's actually not bad.
It's not bad. Yeah.
And in that same thing, he mentions Kingdom Death Monster. And he says, yeah. I can't find a Kingdom Death miniature without boobs.
Yeah. I mean.
And then as proof, he sends us a miniature called the Wet Nurse.
Uh-huh.
You were familiar with what a wet nurse does?
Vaguely.
So a wet nurse is someone who nurses for a mom. So like a queen might have a wet nurse because
sure.
she can't bother to feed her child because
yeah.
she's busy being queenly or something.
Sure.
So then a wet nurse would take care of that for her.
Sure, sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And sure enough, it was a large woman miniature that kind of looked like Jabba the Hutt with uh-huh. about 75 boobs on it.
Okay.
So
that accurately describes the game. You know, I actually sit down and shut up, or shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
Did a video review of Kingdom Death recently.
Uh-huh.
And I watched that because I was just insanely curious. And they basically laid out all the same criticisms that we were concerned, that I expressed, right? Like, I don't get what this is. I'm paraphrasing here. You should, if you're curious, watch the video. It's worth watching. I think it's a very fair assessment of what that game is. And they basically said this game, it's been several weeks since I've seen it, so I want to make sure that I paraphrase it accurately. I think they basically said this game is horribly tasteless and offensive and not a great game.
Okay.
But also it can be pretty fun. That's probably not a fair. Just watch the video.
I'll watch the video.
Watch the video. And builders, watch the video. It's a good. Sit down, shut up, or shut up and sit down, whatever that
it's
goes. Those guys are smart. Those guys are smart.
Indeed.
And they have good criticism. Yeah. So we have some Twitter questions here.
Let's do it.
Ben Pinchback says,
that guy. I love that guy.
What's your unrealistic goal for the next couple of years that you're secretly hoping to achieve? What is yours, Jason?
Well, it's not a secret if we say it out loud.
Well, yeah.
But I would say I really want to get several games out there. Like, that's always been my kind of goal, right? Is to get, like, 5-plus games published.
Because
I feel like not a lot of designers get to do that, right? And I'd feel super awesome if I got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I like having my game that I can, like, play with people and show to people and give to people and, you know... Mm-hmm. So honestly, it's that simple. Like, I'd like to get several games out there. So we'll say five. Cool. So four more. I got one down, four more to go.
Yeah. Unrealistic goal for the next few years. Okay. For 2017, I want to sell two games to publishers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's, I mean, given my track record in the 5 years that we've been doing this and I've sold two total.
It wasn't the same year, though.
It wasn't the same year. I don't want to get my hopes up.
And that was 2 years ago now, right?
Yeah, so. Right. I would... So if we're going to say next couple of years... Oh, boy. I don't know.
Man, you are really just knocking out of the park.
I try to be realistic, and I try to be to not get my hopes up. You know, I work hard not to be unrealistic, and so when people say, "Hey, be unrealistic, be crazy," I struggle because I don't have any ideas ready. I don't have any thoughts, any pie in the sky hopes ready. Because I try and make sure that I keep my my expectations low so that I'm not disappointed in myself when I fail.
And you still are still.
Yeah. Then I hope that I can come up with some irrational and unrealistic goals. That's my hope.
Wow. Lame. Okay.
I know. Total cop out. Sparks Games replied to that and said, "Hey, I second that. What's your pie in the sky idea for game design industry? I know we've all got one. Apparently I don't."
Nope, you suck.
I suck. I have no dreams.
You know what? Actually, let me change mine.
Oh.
You know that big secret dream project that I've talked to you about?
I think I do,
huge one?
Yeah, that huge one?
I would
one?
Like to get that one out.
Oh, boy.
See, I'm more likely to get 5 games published than the dream project. And I can't talk about the dream project
right. Because
it is blue ocean. It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
That is pie in the sky.
But it's never going to happen.
Dusty says, Dusty also just ordered a copy of the Treasure Trouble from the Game Crafter.
Hey, Dusty.
Dusty's a good man. Dusty says, "I'd love to hear about designing for two players. What makes two player games elegant or fun and replayable?" You know, this is a really good question. Maybe we should save this as a topic.
That should be a topic because
it's a really good question.
I can't answer that in a sentence or two.
I can't either.
Honestly, I probably can't answer it in 20 minutes, but we're going to try.
We can certainly try. Let's see. Okay, Tom Grigana says, "Have stretch goals ruined Kickstarter? What do you think?"
As a consumer, I would say stretch goals is what makes Kickstarter awesome. As someone working with a publisher, I would say, yes, stretch goals have ruined Kickstarter.
As a backer, I don't like stretch goals.
As a backer?
Yeah. I don't, because it makes me worry that the game that I'm buying is incomplete.
Well, I don't worry about that. I don't think a lot of publishers would do that. The ones that would, like, honestly, like, strip out, like, to say, like, this is the good version of this game, and it's the only version that's fun, mm-hmm. but I'm only going to add that stuff in if we make so much money, and it's never going to happen otherwise. I don't want to back that game.
Mm.
And I think most publishers don't do that. I think they have in mind maybe a better game that they want to give you with better, cooler stuff in the game. And I think that's appropriate. But yeah.
To address the question specifically, though, no. Have stretch goals ruined Kickstarter? No. I think stretch goals are part of the reason why Kickstarter is so popular, because it's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
People, backers especially people who are not like us, who are not engaged on the production side, people who are just simply looking to getting excited about new products and new games. I think stretch goals are exciting. They're fun. There's something to root for and something to look forward to. It's something for people to get behind and you know, really champion.
Right.
And good stretch goals, I think, draw more attention to a project. And I think you can say there are criticisms to be made about stretch goals, but I would say objectively, stretch goals have been better for Kickstarter and have been very good for Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the argument I would make. So yeah, there you go.
Is that all the questions?
That's all I had.
All right.
Okay, anything else from you?
No.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to the show then. I hope that you guys had a good time. I think we sure did.
Had a good evening.
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlenderland, and I'm @poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and the Google Play Store. If you want to buy our games, you can go to buildingthegamepodcast.com to get a copy of Water Balloon Washout, or you can go to the Game Crafter where you can get Treasure Trouble, the Rumpelbum Academy for bug-based baking, and finish it, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. And you can come back next week and listen to more of the show. Jason, why don't you take us out?
With what? I literally have nothing. So. What,
just with anything, man. I mean, we want to hear from you one more time.
Oh.
The people want to know.
I believe that next week is going to be a better episode, so you should listen to it.
Well, you're right. That's kind of a weak ending there, but you're right.
Yeah, I know I'm right.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thanks, Jason.
Bye-bye now.
Good night. Yeah.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Fart.